The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings. It's Farrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out. The bad seed, the broken day, the bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad others, bad taste, bad luck, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrell Parade Show on a pain-free Friday. You know what it is. It's right across the river and through the woods from where Granny dropped off a batch of that Giant Delight hybrid when she was drinking a bottle of Pinot in New York City. The Big Apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, directed traffic, some kind of fashion, shake it up, should do it. All my friends that come around, flats and flats of party up, rats on the west side, bedbugs uptown, what a mess, the town's a tatter, my brain's splattered all over Manhattan, should do be shake out. Ooh, what's gigging? It's Farrell with Mafia tonight, and right now, it's Miami leading game 5 over the Lakers by 5 with just over 2 minutes to go and rolling in the first half. Now, it's a 3-point game. They were up by 9-10 max, and now they've cut it to 350-47. And then at the same time that's going on, by the way, Davis hurt his heel in this game and sat for several minutes in the second quarter. He went down in a heap on the floor. He got back up. He's okay. He's in the game now, but he's re-aggravated a heel injury, and they can be rather painful. And as far as game 5 for all the marbles between the Yankees and Rays, it's unbelievable. I think this game, there's been 5 hits in this game, 2 home runs. Judge hit one in the 4th. Meadows hit one in the 5th. Off of Cole before he left the game. He left in the 6th. He pitched great for the Yankees. He struck out like 10 or something like that. All I know is it's 1-1 in the 8th inning. The Yankees have gone to Chapman to get the last 6 outs. Right now, Judge just walked with 2 outs in the top of the 8th. So he gets on base, and then Hicks will bat, and then hopefully get to Stanton. But there you go. So that game's 1-1. And the Miami Laker game is awesome. It's a 3-point game.
Hey, everyone. It's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're all on a bench, and one other game that we're keeping an eye on here is Georgia Tech leading Louisville 32-27 in college football. I don't know how many people are into that with what's going on in the baseball game. That's 1-1 in the eighth, and I think that I have to keep an eye on it. It's hard for me to know everything that's going on when I can't hear. They got out of the jam, so now we're going to the bottom of the eighth. Sanchez is catching now. Shiggy left the game for a pinch hitter, Mike Ford, who struck out as usual. I mean, they got all kinds of hacks on the Yankees. I mean, they really do. The guys that just don't do anything ever. Mike Ford's one of them. Aaron Hicks. I couldn't even believe Hicks had a single tonight. I almost fell over. So, Arozarena now up for the Rays in the bottom of the eighth, and Cuban has been on fire in the playoffs and certainly hitting 462 in the postseason with three homers, four RBIs. And I think the last time up, I could be wrong, he hit one to the wall or something. I think Gardner made a big catch on him and robbed him of a home run. I could be wrong. I missed that part because I was watching the Lakers and Heat. I go back and forth, and I have so much action going, I can't even control it. I thought that this game would be better in terms of runs. There's been so many home runs hit, and there's been scoring and everything else in every game. And then all of a sudden tonight, you get the Judge home run. It's 1-0. An inning and a half later or something, it's 1-1 on the Meadows home run, which barely cleared the wall. It hit the top of the wall. When Judge went up to try to catch it, he ran into like the cushioning above his head and couldn't make the play. And it obviously landed on the top and went out. So Meadows tied it up, and nobody's done jack since. It's just been a 1-1 game throughout. Someone's going to walk off and win this game, and that'll be that. And, I mean, I thought there'd be five runs or something in this game tonight at least. That's what I said today on Coast to Coast. And that never happened. That never materialized. I don't see five runs happening anytime soon in this game. This, to me, looks like someone's going to make a mistake, or someone's going to hit a home run. And what's the difference? That could be the mistake. The one thing that I was enamored with was on the left side was Gio Urshela with an error. This guy's like a gold glove third baseman. And then Gleyber Torres is great as well at short. And they both have errors in the game on ground balls. So like fairly routine ground balls hit hard, but both of them, Gleyber off the heel, and then Gio just missed it flush on a smash and it bounced off his glove. So I was surprised to see those two with errors. You get two on there, and usually, in my view, the error can haunt you. It could come back to bite you in the tuchus. But they got out of both of those jams. And then early in the game, Cole faced bases loaded in the first inning. He was in all kinds of trouble in the first inning, but he got out of it. And then after that, the guy just started mowing him down. I think he had, I could be wrong, but it was like, I think he had 10 strikeouts, 9 at worst. I saw him have the 9th. So, I was sitting there watching, and I'm just like, this guy, he was unbelievable. He had 9 strikeouts in the game. He went 5 1/3, 1 earned run, the 1 hit. He gave up 1 hit, a home run, walked 2, and struck out 9. The guy gives up 1 hit, and it was just this short porch home run to right that tied it. But it is what it is. It's a home run. So any way you slice it, it's a home run. No matter where it lands, no matter how it goes out, it's a home run. That's that. So, 1 out, bottom 8, Chapman is pitching, and he's got a 2-2 count, and I've been losing weight watching this game. It's, as good as it gets for nail-biter status. 1-1, late innings. It's just been very stressful, and I got to tell you, like, some of the at-bats I've seen, just every opportunity they had, like in terms of the Yankees, just it's bad at bats that lead to, you know, nothing. It's just one strikeout after the next and just, I think, terrible at bats. So it is what it is. I think the pitching, frankly, for the Rays has been really good overall. I mean, I thought Glasnow, he walked two, he struck out two, he pitched two and a third. He gave up no hits. Anderson gave up the home run to Judge. He went two and two thirds, gave up two hits, the one home run, and he struck out two. Then Fairbanks came in and he struck out three, gave up one hit in his work, which was two innings. And then Castillo came on, pitched an inning, and he struck out two and walked one. So I actually think that, and that is such a terrible missed strike right there. Chapman's laughing at the home plate umpire. I mean, honest to Christ, it was right down the middle. It was right down the middle. You have got to be kidding me on that pitch. I don't know if you're watching this, Mafia, but that's a strike. And that's a strike in any world. That's a strike in any league, any game, anywhere. You got to be kidding me. Anyway, 1-1. Yeah, he's now full count. I thought it was a strike. Then they bring out their fancy 3D graphics and tell you that it's not a strike. But that looked like a strike to me. So we're not worried about a 3D graphic when you're pitching. You see, we have home plate umpires, right? So you don't have the 3D luxury. That's just for TV, charts and graphs. That's the... fancy here. Let's show you. Let's embarrass the umpire. That's what that is. But the real call is the one that the ump makes. And when you're watching the naked eye as a human being and you're seeing that pitch come in, that was a strike. I mean, if I'm sitting there watching it on TV, even I don't even hear about it. The angles and everything else. That was a strike. And the home plate umpire, he has called so many off-speed strikes tonight that were low. That were low at the feet of batters for both teams, that you cannot call all those low off speed front of the plate low strikes and then not call a ball right in the glove, right in the groin, right over the plate. You cannot not call that a strike. You gotta keep it consistent. If you're gonna throw all the foot strikes down by your feet, then on breaking stuff, that the noodle that falls off the table, then you got to call strikes that are dead over the plate in the glove. Then, of course, the guy hits a home run. Then he hits a home run to win the game. He just hit a home run after the strike three call that the umpire blew. Brousseau hits a solo home run off Chapman. And that's that. The Rays just took the lead in the bottom of the eighth with that. After that strike, you've got to be kidding me. I knew it. Like, that was a strike three. That was strike three right there. And everyone saw it. And no call. And then he gets another couple pitches and hits a home run to left. Some no-name. Brousseau. That's the guy that Chapman threw at his head in the regular season. That's the guy that they had the incident with. Brousseau was the guy that Chapman threw at his head in the regular season that started all the war between the Rays and the Yankees. So. That guy just got even with the Yankees, and the Rays just took the lead in the bottom of the eighth with a solo home run right to the first or second row on the short porch and left. So once again, Chapman, it's unbelievable to me, this guy, how he gives up these home runs to these guys like Altuve, and now this no-name Brousseau hits a home run off him in the bottom of the eighth. You knew, I even said this earlier on the show, that a home run's going to end it. It's just going to end it. This has been a 1-1 game. Nothing else is going to happen. There's going to be a walk-off home run, and that'll be that. And there it was. And I got to tell you, and there's no denying I like the Yankees, but that was a strike. The pitch by Chapman was a strike. Strike three, and he didn't call it. And then the guy hits a home run two pitches later. So, and then when he threw the strike, Chapman was actually laughing at the ump. He was sitting there looking at him, laughing at him, because it was such a strike. He's like, you got to be kidding me. And if you say anything to him, you get thrown out of the game. So, because they're all on short fuses, the fat ass umps. All of them have short fuses. You can't say anything to them. They're never wrong. But now it's down to three outs for the Yankees after the Brousseau home run. So I'd say it'll take a miracle now because they're toast. Unbelievable. I can't believe it. I thought that was a strike. I'll say that's a strike every day, all day, 6 ways till Sunday.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Our longtime pal Jason Cole, NFL insider, is back on the bench. He's got a new book out on John Elway, Relentless Life, that came out like a month ago. Let's get him on the bench and talk about it and talk about the NFL a little bit. How you doing, Jason?
I'm fantastic. What's going on, Scott?
Hey, so wow, that's really cool. The Elway book. When did that whole thing start up? That process and I haven't seen the book. I just saw it now. You started doing it then.
Started working on 2014. Basically up until, I would say the last 2 years, you know, it was writing and researching up until the last 2 years. There was, you know, some rewriting and, you know, a final chapter that had to be done. But most of the writing, the heavy lifting had been done up about 2 years ago. And then it was waiting for the release date. And, you know, the plan was to release it now and have it ready and have people buy it now. And, you know, and for Christmas gifts and all those wonderful things as we head into the holidays and doing a lot of radio and discussion of it. But the reviews on it have been fantastic. And I'm really, really happy with where it's at right now, with the sales and how they're going. Things have been great.
So what about Elway? What did you have access to him, or how did you do the book?
Yeah, I had quite a bit of access to him. I talked to more than 200 people who also know him. You know, family, friends, teammates, you know, this is an extensive number of people and spent a lot of time. I was fortunate. A lot of people that I got a hold of, you know, sadly, a couple of them have passed away here. You know, Turk Shonert, who he played with in college, his mother recently passed away. I was fortunate to get a chance to talk to her. The former president of Stanford University had a hilarious story about Elway and his buddies at his fraternity they lived in college. Pulled quite a little prank one night. And pushed one of their buddies in his car when he was slightly inebriated and left him on the left his car on the patio of the president's house. And he said he woke up the next morning knocking on the door, and the president of Stanford University greeted their buddy and wondering why the car was parked there. So, that story. That story is, you know, is excellent. And, the punchlines would not have been nearly as good if I hadn't found out some of the stuff from President Kennedy's side, Donald Kennedy, the former president of Stanford University. So, I was fortunate to, you know, get this research done, you know, as early as I did.
So what, do you think of him as in his, you know, post-playing life and his, management of running the Broncos, that career, how do you evaluate him in terms of your thoughts on him? And then do you do that in the book as well, talk about him with a suit on?
Oh, absolutely. Because the point of the book, in large part, is this is a person who, you know, they won a couple of Super Bowls, went to 5 Super Bowls as a player, made the Hall of Fame, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt Hall of Famer, number one overall pick, all these things that he accomplished on the field. And yet he had this overwhelming desire to want to get back into the game as an executive and to keep competing. And he was willing to, go and be an executive in the Arena Football League for 6 years to prove that he was really, truly into this. Because so many people were like, yeah, sure, John, you want to do this? Yeah, sure. You don't know what the hours are like. He's like, well, yeah, I kind of do. My dad was in personnel, right? My dad was a coach. I know what it's like. I want to do this. Oh, sure, John, you like to go play golf. You don't really want to have to the pressure of going to pick players. Yeah, I actually do. I want to go out and do this. And as much as people didn't believe him for basically a decade after he was done with his career, he finally got this chance. And I would say that to evaluate him, look, he's won a Super Bowl. And, he helped them. And I would say that they don't sign Peyton Manning unless they have John Elway. Because Peyton Manning wouldn't have not, I mean, I'm not saying they absolutely would not have, but I think it made it a whole lot easier when they had somebody who could speak the same language as Manning to Manning and say, look, I've been in that position. I've been a franchise quarterback. I know what it takes to win. I know what we did. I'm going to be able to do this, this, and this for you, and you can trust me. And I think that meant a lot to Manning, and that's why they went to 2 Super Bowls. They won one. They went to the playoffs 4 straight years. They did some amazing things early on. Now, the last 4 years, sure, there's a lot of criticism they go Elway's way. But if you're sitting here and saying, that the Super Bowl was not really about him and he shouldn't get credit for it, I think you're being overly simplistic. Yeah, the players make the plays, but you need to have general managers and put everything together.
Yeah, he definitely did that. Do you think he believes in Locke? I know he's injured, but do you think he really believes in that kid? Or do you think he's like eyeing the future and possibly if they don't play well, because they haven't, if they don't play well, that he'd be able to get his hands on Trevor Lawrence?
Look, I think that he believes in Drew Locke as much as anybody believes in a second round pick, which is to say, look, I think the kid's got talent. I think there's some upside. I think that this was the right place to take him. And we're going to let him have every chance to make it. And we're going to give him tools and surround him with people. But this is not a no doubt, no brainer kind of player. And if Trevor Lawrence falls in your hands, you got to think about that very seriously, right? Now, all of that said, I think there are some people who are down a little bit on Trevor Lawrence, but he's been awfully good for a long time. And if he continues, I think it's a no doubt that he's the number one overall pick. If certainly not, he's not drifting out of the top three.
So did he talk about, obviously had to have talked about, like I was at that Super Bowl in San Diego at Qualcomm, when he twirled into the end zone, what were his fondest memories of winning those 2 Super Bowls? That had to be one of them.
Well, I think that everything that went into the helicopter play in that victory over Green Bay, because he didn't play a particularly good game, stats-wise, but he was playing against a great defense. And they were playing with Terrell Davis and, going up and down the field with Terrell Davis. So they were going to make it happen with Terrell Davis. So it wasn't necessarily a game that they were going to put him on display. But if you remember that play on the helicopter, it's a 3rd down, and I think 6 play where he gets 7, really dramatic play. But the setup for that play is the game against Pittsburgh where he threw the first down play to Shannon Sharp to close out that game against Pittsburgh in the playoffs, right? So going into that practice for that week, Shanahan basically says, look, we're going to run that same play because Green Bay plays this kind of defense in third and mid-distance situations like 3rd and 6. And always like, are you sure that they always do this? And Shanahan kept telling him, yeah, it's 100%. They always play this kind of defense. Sharp will be open. And Elway all week was like, I don't feel comfortable about this. I don't feel comfortable about it. And he kept talking about it and talking about it and questioning Shanahan. He would talk about it in his room when they were preparing for the game. He was rooming with Bubby Brister that week. Brister remembers it. And Elway just said, look, you know, he said to Bubby at one point, if I get this look, I got to take off. And one of the things is the study, the hard work. For all of the physical greatness that Elway had, even at the end, you know, all the arm strength that he had, everything that people talk about, that made him so great. It was the brains at the end of the time that the decision making, because as soon as he drops back and he sees that defense, when he plants his back foot, he takes off right away. He knows exactly what he's doing once he plants the back foot, and he knows I got to take off because I can't make this play against this particular defense. And that is the only way that play happens. If he hesitates another half a second, that play doesn't happen. And that's how close that game was and how important it was for them to pull off that kind of upset, because they needed everything to go right to pull off that upset. And obviously the next year they're going up against Reeves. And, you know, it's a nice little bit of revenge as he walks out the door. You know, because they set it up for him to throw for 300 plus yards and be the MVP, sort of a going away in that game. But you know, I think as good as it was, as good as he played statistically in that final game against Atlanta, I think that one single play against Green Bay is such a huge defining moment.
Yeah, you know, respectfully, I got about 45 seconds here. How much juice do you think he has with that family that owns the Broncos, the Bolins, in terms of like lasting in this gig? Because a lot of people have given him heat for, you know, not being good at his job. I don't know who to believe. I have more time. Just hold on a second, Jason. Here's what I want to do. I just want to take this break and then come back and get your answer on that and then talk about the rest of the league, because all I'm going to do is have to cut you off here at the end anyway. I got to follow this clock. So just hold that thought on Elway running the Broncos with the criticism that he gets that he's not good at the gig, and then how much juice he's got with that family after Pat's passing, and what the future holds for him in Denver, because a lot of heat he gets for that job that he's not good at it. And I don't know what to believe. I want to hear from you. We'll come back with Jason Cole, the great writer, NFL insider on the bench. All right, we're talking to Jason Cole. He's got a new book out on John Elway. So you heard what I said. The guy, how much juice does he have with that family in terms of his job with all the criticism that he gets?
Well, I think some of the criticism, well, you know, look, there's some fair parts of it. You know, the quarterback situation has not been great. I think the quarterback situation is relatively normal considering compared to everybody else. Like you got Peyton Manning, and more importantly, you got the team out of Tim Tebow in 2012. You deserve some credit for that. And the last 4 years, you deserve criticism for what's happened with the quarterback situation. But I would also say to any Broncos fan, if you're betting on anybody to get you back to the Super Bowl and start winning championships, Don Elway is the guy that you're going to bet on, right? I mean, that's the guy I'm putting my money on at this point in time. And I don't say that as a cheerleader. I just say, you know, if they've won 3 Super Bowls in the history of the organization, he's part of all of them. He's the common denominator to all of them. So I would say give him a lot of credit for, you know, the one Super Bowl victory, and, you know, as much as you give any executive, and give him some patience to see if Drew Locke becomes the guy or if they can solve the quarterback situation some other way. As for the Bolin family, look, that situation's a mess. And they're trying to figure it out. Okay, there's a lot of infighting. You got a lot of kids, you know, from Pat Bowlen and from the ex-wife and his, you know, his widow, Annabelle. Annabelle wants one of her kids to be in charge. That's probably what's going to happen. Brittany's probably going to end up being the one if they can get this thing together. I think that Elway has a lot of juice with the family because of what he's done so far and their comfort with him over the years. I think that he's also positioned himself very well if they maintain control of the team. So I think that he will stick around. I think that that's what, right now, who's running the team is probably one of their least concerns. Having peace among them and with the NFL is their biggest concern. And I think that even if things go sideways and the Bolin family doesn't end up owning this team and they end up selling the team and going their merry ways, I think there's a very good chance that John Elway will be part of a group that will buy the team. I think that he has a lot of friends in the oil and gas business who will put up the money to own the team, and he will probably be a part owner of that and stay with it, with the organization. So one way or the other, I don't think John Elway is going anywhere, and nor do I think he should go anywhere at this point in time.
So do you, you know, when you covered the league forever and talked to this guy, and as he's aged and as he's become an executive and he runs the team, what's the difference in the man that you interviewed as a player as compared to the man that he's become now in this role? Like, what was the difference in terms of, you had to remember, because I remember interviewing him as a player. And I've never interviewed him as a executive. Have you noticed a difference in him?
Oh, there's a huge difference. I mean, look, he's got to be the guy who's got to make tough decisions about whether certain guys stay or go, right? And when you have that kind of position, you can't necessarily be friends with guys. So he's not the guy who's palling around the locker room. He's not the guy who's creating bonds, you know, among players and taking guys out. When he was a player, you know, Wednesday and Thursday, you know, going out to bars, picking up the tab, making sure guys are, you know, there's a bond, and, you know, and being the first guy to show up, you know, for workouts in the off season, the last guy to leave, all those kinds of things. You know, as Mike Shanahan said in the book, John Elway is the greatest locker room quarterback of all time by far. He understood the mid-level management job that he had on that team in putting everything together. That doesn't exist anymore. He's not there to be everybody's buddy. He's there to run the show and to analyze players and to pick players and to run the draft and to make trades and to make decisions on who's the coach and who's going to be on the team. And there's distance there. So I think he understands that very, very well, and is comfortable with that because he understands what the parameters of the job are supposed to be.
When you think back to watching him play and covering him all those years, how great do you put him in the pantheon of quarterbacks, like in your lifetime, that you have admired? Like, I go back to Terry Bradshaw when he, you know, won 4 Super Bowls in 6 years, and then the Montana years and all the quarterbacks that you've seen, the great ones, the Bradys and everything else, the Favres, the Elways, the Dan Marinos, all these guys are in the Hall of Fame. Where do you put him?
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's right there with anybody. And for, as far as physical gift, in terms of, you know, arm strength and being able to run around and make decisions and all those other things, I think he's as good as anybody else. I will say that, you know, look, there's some personal bias here. I mean, I went to college with the guy, and I've followed his career for 40 years. I mean, I still remember to this day sitting in the stands at Stanford Stadium, the first game I ever went to, right? And I'm in those terrible seats because I'm a freshman, right? You know, we're down low at the on the stadium. You know, so you're down low in that front row, right? You're barely seeing over the players, you know, over their helmets. But there was one throw where, you know, it just kind of opened up and you could see the whole play in between the players, and he throws the slant pass. And I remember it hits the receiver in the chest, and there's a thud, there's a noise that it made that I had never heard on a football field. Right. And just like, oh my God, what did I see? And the wide receiver falls over after he catches it. Like, the ball basically caught him. And that's one of, you know, like, I saw dozens of plays like that, you know, from college to his pro career, that he could just do some stupendous things. But it's like any player, you know, you get put in this, you know, a lot depends on what system do you get put in. I mean, if you put John Elway in Dan Marino's system, you get all the same numbers. If you put John Elway in the Bill Walsh system with all the players that Montana was surrounded by, I think you get all the same championships. I don't think there's any, you know, huge difference. In fact, you might get a one or two more. I don't know. But I don't think you get anything worse with him. And I always look at it this way. He's my favorite quarterback, and I'll admit that Brady's the greatest of all time in terms of accomplishment. But if you want to list however many guys you want, like you want to list 6, 8, 10 guys as being among the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and let's just say we're having this fantasy exercise where we're picking sides for like a 10-team league, and we get to choose, you know, a quarterback, I'll take the last pick. Right? Like, I'll be okay with whoever's the last on that list of 10 guys, whether it's Bradshaw or Elway or Unitas or even Montana. Give them to me. I'm good.
So did you have do you think that because you knew him and you had that Stanford, you know, vig going that like because, you know, it had to help you get this inside his world. Book done because he doesn't give access to anybody like in his career playing or otherwise. And it had to like, you knew going to Stanford would pay off for you one day in some way, shape or form, fiscally, career, in some capacity, Stanford was going to pay off. Did you ever think it would be that you would, the Stanford juice would be that you would have access to John Elway for the rest of his life and then write a book about him?
That wasn't the plan going in.
But it worked.
So I can't say that. But it worked.
It worked.
And look, I thought about it over the years, but I think I thought about it during his career, like, oh, it'd be cool to write his biography. And then it actually got more interesting when he got into management because I covered the Dolphins back in the, you know, I covered the Dolphins for 16 years.
Right.
And you were down in South Florida for some of that. And
sure.
You know, I covered when Marino came back, you know, he made that, you know, that 1 week comeback to be in management.
Right.
And I remember going to Mobile, Alabama for the first day of workouts for the Senior Bowl. And Marino's working for CBS at the time. And, you know, being Dan Marino, which is a pretty good gig, right? Just being Dan Marino.
Right.
And so he comes down, he shows up in Mobile, Alabama on a, you know, bitterly cold, ugly, typical January day in Mobile. And he's sitting in the stands. And Philip Rivers is the quarterback. And J.P. Lossman, Matt Schaub's there. And, you know, the Dolphins need a quarterback. And this whole thing's going on, right? And and Marino's sitting there. And he's not taking any notes. He's just kind of watching. And I just remember he got up and with the most sarcastic sound in his voice, he goes, my rear end. And he didn't say rear end, but he goes, my rear end is froze. He was so miserable. And he quit a week later. Right. And it's like, I don't blame him. Like I didn't make fun of him. I mean, I'm not making fun of him. You know, of Dan. I mean, it's a funny story, but I don't blame him. Like that's hard. Like being the GM of a team or being a, That's not easy work. And if you've already put in a career where you took hits for a living and, you know, you did all those things, you know, like, and you got a way to make more money somehow, some other way, go do that. Right.
Right.
I don't blame anybody for doing that, but Elway wanted to do it. And that's where all of a sudden it was like, why does this dude want to do this? What's inside of him? What built this guy that said, I want to compete even as an executive. And that's rare. I mean, I know there are some former players who are in it now, and you know, John Lynch has done it.
Right.
But most guys don't. And if they do, they're not very good and they quit real fast.
You know, you're it's true about Elway or about Marino, because when I was there when that happened and he listen, there's no one that had more power in South Florida. I don't know which one had more power, Shula or Marino.
I've never seen
anything like it. Like when I was down there, I was like, I mean to tell you, Shula, if Shula was God, Marino was Jesus. I mean, they had more absolute, like they ran. It was like, who needs a governor? Who needs a mayor when you've got Shula and Marino in South Florida? Hey, listen, I wanted to talk football with you, but The book is so fascinating. The stories about Elway are so great. The next time I get you on, we'll talk more about everything going on with the NFL and everything. Absolutely. But that was just fabulous. A Relentless Life, John Elway. Get it. Order it. I got to get a copy of it. I got to get my hands on it. I want to read it bad now. You got me all worked up over Elway. So congratulations, Jason, on the book. And we'll get you on TV on the Coast to Coast show one of these days real soon to talk NFL for sure. You can count on that. It's great catching up. Again, congrats on the book, brother. I love you. Thanks for checking in with us tonight.
Thanks, dude. Talk to you later.
All right, my man, Jason Cole, great author, great NFL insider, covered a league forever. He's fantastic. So congrats to the Rays. They beat the Yankees, and they beat him with that home run in the bottom of the eighth inning, and the Yankees did absolutely nothing in the ninth. And it's going to be the Astros against the Rays. I believe that starts Sunday, and then Monday will be the Dodgers and Braves. I think a lot of people wanted that revenge Astros-Yankees ALCS. That's not going to happen. I still stand by. I thought it was a called third strike. The home plate umpire blew it, and then the guy hit a home run two pitches later. I thought that was a terrible missed strike call. Chapman even laughed at him. Right now, the Heat are up with a minute 25 left in the third, 82-78 on the Lakers in game five. Butler's having another huge game. Bottom line is, since Davis got hurt, he hasn't had a big game, and that's why the Lakers are losing. All right, 86-82 Heat, and they got the ball, and they're going to get the last shot of the third. And Robinson hit a gigantic three and got fouled by Kuzma. I just have to say that, and then they get the dunk from Bam at the end here with 9 seconds left, 88-82, they're up six. So I'm surprised completely that they're winning. And I also think there's no way they're not covering in this game because the Lakers are down six after three and the Lakers are laying seven. So right now, that's just not happening in my book. I think the Heat are going to cover at the very least, and they may very well win the game. So that's amazing to me, Mafia, in some semblance of truth, because I thought tonight I had no doubts, zero, that the Lakers were going to be drinking champagne tonight. I thought for sure that they were going to win the championship tonight and it was over. I just didn't see any life in the Heat at all. When it went to 3-1, it was over for me. I can't even believe that they're winning this game and that Butler's got 27, Robinson's got 20, Hero's got 10, Nunn's got 11, Crowder's got 11. I mean, the only guy, Adebayo's got 9. He's 1 point away from every guy on the teams in double figures. So that's all it takes to win the game. When you got every single guy that played in double figures, you're winning.
Right. And I mean, especially that's really not the way that, you know, Lakers usually are on defense. They're usually much better on defense. And right now this game is all LeBron so far. Like, he's driving in, he's hitting threes, you know, he's trying to make things happen for other guys. Like, he even kicked it to Kuzma in the corner. Kuzma bricked the three because he's terrible. And then LeBron goes and gets the offensive board and throws it to him for an easy layup. Otherwise, it's another wasted opportunity that, you know, if LeBron's not taking a shot, you're pretty much gasping, hoping that it goes in because these other guys just aren't doing anything for him. So it's been all on him so far. I mean, he's got a great record in closeout games, but he can't do it all himself.
Oh, and that's exactly what he's having to do tonight, right? Same story as always. And we'll break it down for you. I'll tell you this much. One of the problems is, I mean, Davis has 22. He's got to have 30 plus for them to win.
Hey, everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.